Welcome to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show and would like to hear more from us, give us a follow on your favourite streaming platform. Welcome to the show, guys. Today we're joined by Michael Gillett. Michael is Head of Development at Betway Group. Thanks so much for taking the time to do this, Michael. I mean, I always find it fascinating that people can squeeze out an hour of the day, you know, busy people like you.
You know, I'm very keen to join and to have this conversation. I think it's important to be able to share in this manner what it is the company does and the role that I fulfill and kind of why I enjoy doing what I do.
Yeah, excellent. So, you know, I mentioned your role there, which is head of development. So could you give us a bit of insight into what that means in Betway Group?
Yeah, so I'm one of them. There are a number of heads of development across the whole group, but the kind of function that we perform is to make sure that the products that we're building, whether it is the individual bits of code or the way in which we're deploying things to production, and when it's actually on production, how do we maintain that that runs as we need? It's about designing that, about building that in a way that is supported in the long term, that meets the needs of the customers, needs of the business. It meets all of the various regulations, the accreditation that we have. So there's a lot of quality, a lot of care about making sure we're understanding the problem that we're trying to solve for the customers as well. And we want to be very data driven. And so a lot of what my job is making sure that we across our teams can collaborate in a way to ensure that that quality is baked in across everything that we're doing at the Betway Group. Because each team, each product will find new things that we can learn from. And we should be sharing that good practice and making sure we're keeping up with industry standards as well. And so, yes, yeah, it's a fairly broad set of tech that we use to achieve all of that.
Amazing. And we're going to touch upon, you know, identifying new technologies and implementing them later on in the show. But initially, I want to find out how you got started in your career, because I've done a little bit of background research here. Hope you don't mind, Michael.
No, just
a bit of internet stalking. There's nothing incriminating. But would you say that your career has been quite linear, or would you say that you've just kind of taken things as they've come? Because the reason I ask that is because I ask a lot of people on the show this question, and it seems that most of them don't, you know, plan their career. No one seems to have actually actively navigated it. And I was just wondering if it's the same with you.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. So, I mean, when I went to uni, I've always enjoyed technology, and I went to uni doing electrical and electronic engineering. So that's the hardware, resistors, capacitors.
Right. That takes you back to year six, resistors, capacitors, LEDs. Yeah.
So we did a lot of that. And in one of the modules within the undergrad was programming, but at a very, very low level language, assembly language. And I actually, whilst I didn't enjoy writing in assembly language so much as certainly with the languages we get to write with today, I did enjoy the very logical approach to how that worked. And it wasn't quite as equations based as the hardware that we were working with. So then I went in and actually did a master's in computer science, because it was actually something I found more interesting. But yeah, when I went into uni, I never thought I would move into computer science. Then I did a couple of years of work within the Students' Union before actually getting my job as a junior software developer with the Betway Group. And again, I didn't know quite where I wanted to go, but I knew I wanted to work in software, and I knew I wanted to build something that people can kind of interact with. I was much more a front-end developer then. As time went on within my experience within the Betway Group, I was exposed to more back-end tech, more services and systems and manipulating data and managing authentication, all of these kinds of things, which actually I found interesting and enjoyable to work with, that did actually move me away from where I actually thought I originally enjoyed things, which was a kind of building the front end to have a customer fully interact with something that I had built and build something nice that looks really good, that is very functional, that someone's going to kind of be delighted with using or whatever. But I think, as I say, as time moved on, what I realized was I also found how do you build systems to allow that kind of experience to even happen for a customer? How do you build those systems? And that's what I started getting interested in some of the more of the back-end tech. Then I was involved in management as well, and I found it really rewarding to be in a management position where I can help deliver initiatives and projects, products for the company, for customers, at a slightly broader level. So less hands-on, but more about working with people and other teams to deliver on these things. Then I got to an architect role, which again is less hands-on, but again is around how do we build systems now across the Betway Group to deliver what we need for projects. And then it was this opportunity to become head of development turned up, and it's like, well, that's the next step for me. And again, it's a broader view yet again of how do we work, how do we collaborate, how do we share good ideas, and how do we actually deliver successful things for customers and for the bottom line for the business. And that's what really gets me interested in it. And so it's again really not hands-on in work. I do side projects where I am actually devving, and that's where I actually kind of continue to work with code and try and keep up to date. But actually I find it very fulfilling to, and if I think back to that very first thing of I like building UIs because customers are going to interact with it, I can still do the same thing, but it's at a very broad level, and I can help other people, other teams, and we can collaborate to deliver those things that are going to be useful to the customer.
Really interesting, because I've found with you know, if you're moving up to management from a hands-on position, you know, there's a lot of people that really enjoy being hands-on with the code and with the tech, and then they have to kind of, when they move up to management, they have to change their thought process entirely, because it's a different role entirely. Really, you're leading a team of people who do the job that you previously did, rather than actually just doing the job. And then I think your mindset with that is perfect for management, which is you're still very much aware that you're helping people. You're actually helping people do what you initially set out to want to do initially.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's one thing that I'm very conscious of is I'm not an expert in things that I might have been classed an expert on in the past, because I'm not hands-on in the same way that I used to be. So I can know the concepts and I can understand them. I can read up on them as new tech comes along. I can appreciate them, but I'm not the expert in that. So what I rely on are the teams to be the expert on these, whether they're the problem space that we're trying to come up with a solution for, or whether it's the actual language, or whether it's Azure, which is where we've got our services running. I'm not the expert on those things, but maybe I know who is, and maybe I can put them in a conversation to come up with the best solution. And that's rewarding to see that that can happen. And because we get the right people in those conversations, we're delivering, building the right things for the customers. That to me is really enjoyable.
And this leads us quite nicely onto, you know, identifying new technologies and, you know, implementing them into the business. I mean, what would you say is a good way to do that? I mean, from identifying and working with them, essentially.
Yeah, so I think in the before times, before COVID, it was often going to conferences in person. I found them really good because there would be a number of sessions where there would be technologies or people or processes which you kind of know a little bit about, or maybe you know a lot about, and you go to them. Then there might be some other ones as well which are a bit more of a curveball, that it's a term that you know of but know very little about, and just go to a half-hour session and find out a little bit more about it. And I think usually that in that session, it wouldn't necessarily be that obvious as to how you could use that technology, that process in the current day to day. But in 6 months' time, a conversation happens where there's a particular problem that needs to be solved. You know, I think I know how we can solve this with this thing that I heard about a little while back. And yeah, there are still conferences happening now with virtual stuff. There are, I think, fewer of them. And I don't find them, I don't know, maybe it's because they kind of sit at this desk in front of this laptop in the same day, in the same way that I would do a working day, I'm also attending a virtual conference. I don't find virtual conferences as easy to engage with as a physical conference. Mm. And so I can't wait for that, some sort of a physical conference to come back. But there's still lots of opportunities with those conferences to hear about technology that is not something that I'm familiar with or the team are familiar with. And then we'll bring it back and we'll share it and we'll say, look, I saw this other thing, or as a blog post, a lot of the team like reading Reddit and that kind of thing of, and there'll be user groups and communities that we're part of where there's good ideas being shared around there. And we'll just share within our team's channels new things that we're discovering. And what's then interesting is, how do you know that just because something's new,
yeah,
is it worth investigating? Is it worth using? That's always a difficult thing.
Mm.
And the way that we've approached that with things like Docker and Kubernetes, which we are using, was, okay, we understand Azure Web Apps very well. We understand performance. We know how to auto scale. We know how to deal with incidents. We know all of the ways to fine tune them with various settings, whether it's within the app itself or within the actual kind of setup of the web app. Then the conversation is, okay, well, if we want to look at Docker and Kubernetes, Docker has its benefits, Kubernetes has its benefits. We think Docker's a given. We think we want to go with Docker as a way forward. That's cool. But when it comes to Kubernetes and running a cluster and running these Docker images as within our production environment, is that better than running an Azure web app in our production environment? And so we need to evaluate that. We have to do some experimentation and testing to see whether the performance is better. And if it's not, is it that we've not set it up right? Like, is it that Docker is fundamentally not as performant as a web app? Or is it that we need to go and learn more about Docker and Kubernetes, and how do we get that whole process working as we want to be as familiar with that as we are with the Azure web app and the kind of technologies that we're more familiar with? And that's exactly what we did. And we ended up with proving that actually using Kubernetes, when you fine tune it in the way that we wanted to for some of our products, we could get Kubernetes to run faster than an Azure web app. Well, then that's brilliant. That's the reason to use that new technology. Not because it's new technology. That isn't ever a reason to use new technology in a production system. It might be a reason to investigate, but once you've proven that it is better for a number of reasons, or maybe there's only one reason why it's better, but that reason might be so much better than the others that that is the reason to go with it. And so, yeah, we did a whole piece around proving that it was better. And we do... was one thing that I do talk a lot about would be hypothesis-driven development. And that is true of features that we might add to a product so much as it is true of the technical work that we're doing where we might need to improve performance or we've got a new authentication system or whatever. Everything that we're doing in theory has some form of metric somewhere that determines that it is better now than it was before. And we run experiments with everything. We use feature flagging everywhere so that we can prove that everything we're doing is improving those metrics, is making the product better, is improving the customer experience, is improving the bottom line. There are a number, as I say, a number of different metrics that result in different ultimate kind of end metrics being measured. And understanding that we can prove all of them to be better than what we had yesterday is crucial to ensuring that we're building better products consistently.
Yeah, excellent. And, you know, as a head of development, I mean, I imagine you'll have to look, you know, because you've got your day-to-day role, which would be kind of like, I presume it would be looking after your team and making sure things are running smoothly. But then you've also got another part of your role, which is like you were just mentioning, which is, you know, finding and implementing new technologies. So one role is looking down at the business and down at your team, and the other part of the role is looking out and ahead.
Yeah.
Two very different things. And I just want to find out how you kind of juggle those two things. I mean, you know, you can't lose sight of one and spend too much time on the other. You've got to have a balance, really, and you can't lose sight of either.
Yeah.
So how do you balance that?
So I'm very keen on collaboration, and it's not just a buzzword, but actually we've got a number of teams, some of which are front end and back, and then some which are back end. And I'm not a huge fan of either of those terms. They serve a purpose, but they also come with a lot of kind of baggage around what we mean by that. So when I'm talking about front end teams, I don't mean that they're only concerned with CSS, HTML, and JavaScript. Those front end teams are also owning, in some cases, Docker and Kubernetes setups. In some cases, it's an Azure web app, but they're owning the servers as well. But they're using Node, they're using Next.js, we're using React on the server, and we're doing server-side rendering, getting it to the client, and then you're in the realms of what some people would perceive as the traditional front end. Now, as I say, I'm not an expert on this stuff, so generally what happens is, in this scenario, where we're collaborating, we want to make sure that the front end teams are working together and knowledge sharing, and the back end teams are working together and knowledge sharing. Now, that might not be on any products, it might not be on any projects or any initiatives, but it's around, oh, we found this cool new tech, you guys should check it out as well. Or, guys, we're not sure about this, what are your thoughts? Let's do a session around pros and cons of why we might want to adopt this pattern, this style, this new tech, whatever. So it's constant knowledge sharing. And then I want to be involved in those things to understand what it is that we're looking at and evaluating. But when it comes back to me not being an expert on things, yes, I look out for what is the new technologies out there, but I'm also quite conscious that I actually want things to be fed up to me that, again, I can then share with relevant teams across the group to make sure that we are keeping on top of tech. And then when it comes to, as you say, that difference between kind of managing, looking down and inwards, and then looking outwards for what's happening within the industry, I do like conferences, as I say, and I do actually do conference talks, and I'm writing a book on tech at the minute. And so I'm quite externally focused as well, but that's more about very high level processes and technology concepts as opposed to any individual technology. So yeah, those are the kind of the ways that we would look to make sure that we are aware of what's upcoming in tech.
So for people that aren't as aware, could you give us a bit of insight into the Betway Group and kind of what that is as a service?
Yeah, so Betway is a name that people might be aware of, and that's one of the brands of the Betway Group. Obviously, if you're into football, then you'll see Betway logos on West Ham or whatever. But what we actually are, we look at sports and offer sports betting and that opportunity to kind of engage with sports in a way that's a little bit different from just watching it. But we also have casino products and a lot of esports stuff as well. I'm very, very interested in esports. We sponsor a number of esports teams and tournaments and things around the world, which is really, really exciting. And it's not something that many people perhaps think of either. So it's really great that we're in that position to be doing that. And in terms of, yes, there are other companies out there that offer similar things, but where Betway really shines and I think is what we're really good at is on the regulation side and being very responsible. Obviously, we want to make sure that everyone who plays with us does so in a safe environment and enjoys it for what it is. And so we've got lots of measures in place to make sure that we're being very responsible and that we can work with our customers and make sure that it is a safe but fun environment to partake in these activities, which is a really, it makes working in this space really good, because we know that we can offer this kind of safe environment for these things to happen. And people do enjoy, it's great entertainment with sports and esports and casino games and that kind of stuff. It's great entertainment. So people want to do it, but we need to make sure it's safe. And that's where things that we work on at Betway Group, that we can offer that.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'd just like, if you don't mind, Michael, I'd like to talk about leadership for a little while.
Yeah.
And I'm curious to find out what you would say your leadership style is.
So mine is, I like to empower people. And I think some of the other answers I've already provided, where I know I'm not the expert on things. So I want people to be given opportunities to go off and lead projects, lead initiatives, go and find out things, really give them opportunities to develop and kind of shine. And that's both in pure technical terms, finding a new technology, but it is also in maybe some more of the softer skills, in presentation skills, communication skills. So we do demos, this kind of thing, where we encourage developers to talk on a regular basis to stakeholders to show off the work that we've been doing. We've got a Tech Talks initiative, which on a fortnightly basis, someone within tech in a very broad sense can actually talk about a subject for half an hour or an hour and share with the department and the company the things that it is that they've been working on. And we it covers a whole range of stuff, from ways that we can do testing better or differently, ways that maybe have an appreciation of some of the attack vectors that we might be exposed to and what are we doing to prevent that from happening. These kinds of things are just great for the whole team, very broad sense, to be aware of. And sometimes they're not always going to be directly applicable to every person in every role, but they are interesting and they are very applicable to some people in some roles. And so this constant knowledge sharing is great. And that's something that I'm very keen to push for is collaboration. I always want to make sure that people understand why we're being asked to do something, but then to collaborate on the way in which that is done. So also I spoke about like getting the front end teams together and making sure that we're working in a common way. And we've now established front end principles by which these are the ways in which that we will approach front end development. And again, that is not front end as just CSS and HTML, but it is running a node next. JS server all the way through to actually getting something working in the client. And what are our principles for that? And we're working on similar backend principles and department principles in terms of what we want is for our teams to be empowered, but to have some guidance and kind of safety rails within the way that they can work so that they are quite autonomous, they're quite responsible, they're accountable for the products that they build. And my job, I guess, is to make sure that we are only duplicating work and effort where it makes sense. And where it doesn't make sense, then we should be doing something different. That could be InnerSource. We've got a number of InnerSource projects where we want to better, where if we're going to be doing the same things across multiple teams and multiple products, then we should be thinking, well, how do we do this once and share it? So those kinds of things to me are what I try and do with my teams and how I try and lead the department is very autonomous and empowered, but with best practice kind of baked into the way that we work.
What's really interesting is that with leadership and, you know, empowering a team and, you know, helping all those things, all those teams collaborate and all those things happen and offering guidance as well, it's actually quite amazing because with good leadership, you're doing all of those things for your team and the business. But with good leadership, it's almost like the employees and your team, it kind of works so smoothly that you can't, it's difficult to even see good leadership in a way, if that makes sense. But it's much easier to spot bad leadership.
Yeah, and I think that's an interesting kind of view on it, which is, yeah, you arguably a good leader isn't necessarily that, it's not that they're not that visible, but they've put things in place to make sure that things can happen rather than it becoming a bottleneck where everything has to go up with a resolution to come back down. Yeah, you want that feeling of autonomy and empowerment and buy-in and accountability and responsibility, because we're all adults, and we're all experts in our own areas, and we need to be able to utilize that in the best ways. And to do that, to me, is real, just empowering those people to crack on with the work. If they understand why we need to do it, if they understand the metrics for which we need to be data driven and for which we need to look at our products and our projects and know what success or failure looks like with those things, I don't have to tell them from a technical standpoint what it is they need to do to achieve that. They are well placed to do that themselves. And that's crucial. I mean, I guess the other bit of leadership, that's very much leadership of the tech, the products, the projects that we work on. But in terms of the actual people as well, there's always opportunities for personal development and personal growth, whether that's through training, on-the-job training or conferences, courses, that kind of thing. We're also very keen on like qualifications and exams. We're predominantly a Microsoft tech house, and some of the teams have got a number of Microsoft qualifications, which is really good to have. And it's optional if people want to do that, if people enjoy doing that kind of learning and development where they get kind of a tangible thing out at the end of it, great. But if people would rather watch videos online. Great, we can do that instead. You don't have to do that. And then, yeah, like things again, like the tech talks, this kind of thing of sharing good practice is also another way of learning. And then in terms of responsibilities and accountability, as I say, I'm always pushing to make sure that people are responsible and accountable. And that goes throughout the teams. So we're always looking for how people can step up. What do they want to do as the next step in their career? And we've got various functions. It's people management jobs. We've got architect jobs, which are non-people management, very technical. And then we've got seniority of engineers. And we want people to be mentors. And so there's lots of opportunities where people can grow in other ways than just learning some new piece of technology, which is always great. But tech changes so fast, we're always going to be learning some new piece of tech. So how do we make sure that we are people that can better work within teams, better work within departments, better build products, understand what we need to do and be data-driven and all of this kind of stuff. And that comes with that opportunity to be outside your comfort zone even just get exposed to slightly new things and kind of flourish in that new environment.
Yeah, and I heard a phrase the other week which someone heavily implements into their business through the core of the business, and it was people over everything. And I thought that was really interesting because it's so true, isn't it? If you take care of the people and give them opportunities and, you know, make sure that they're basically, you know, for want of a better word, happy, you know, and empowered, you know, what more can you ask for, really?
Yeah, and if people really buy into the kind of the mission and the vision for the company, the products, the initiatives, the things that we're trying to do, then people are really energized and want to be accountable for those things because they want those things to be successful. So when they're not, they are themselves disappointed that it isn't working quite how we wanted it to be. So, yeah, making sure that people enjoy the work that we're doing. And sometimes it's not always enjoyable. Sometimes there are deadlines and it gets a little bit stressful, but it is always rewarding to achieve that thing and to go, yes, actually, you know what? We did do this. It can be difficult at times, but that's part of the fun at times because we get through that adversity and we're better for it and the products are better for it and the business is better for it. And that's great because, again, it's another opportunity for learning and to be outside of the comfort zone. You don't always want things to just be easy. Sometimes you want a little bit of change and a little bit of difference to develop yourself and to prove to yourself, to your team, to whoever, yeah, we can do this. You need us to do something by a deadline. The regulators need us to do something for the new regulations. Fine, let's figure out how do we achieve this challenge. Okay, let's do it. And that's always great. But yeah, you need the people to be fully enjoying that environment and empowered within that environment in order to achieve that.
It seems to me like when I speak to you now, I think it feels like you're a natural leader to me. So, I mean, in my opinion for you, it feels like a lot of leadership for you is innate, but there is also a lot of learning that has to be done as a leader. You can't just, you know, learn on the job and hope that your charisma pulls it off. I mean, like we've been discussing, there is an incredible amount to think about with leadership. There's a lot of learning that has to be involved. And I just want to find out what resources you rely on. I mean, do you do a lot of reading or where do you go to learn about leadership?
Yeah, so you can see some of the books behind me, actually. Like the Phoenix Project, that kind of thing that I find really interesting from a... How do you, and again, it might not be strictly leadership, but it's about how does a company work, how do teams work to build software in the fast-paced environment in which we're in. And there's elements of leadership in that book, but I also listen to audiobooks as well, listen to some podcasts. And again, there might be more slightly on the tech side, but there is that element of you get this idea of what good tech is, of the kind of people who are willing to go out and talk about good tech and champion good tech, and they're going to be leaders. And so listening to that kind of the way in which they articulate the problem space that they're in and the solutions that they've discovered, I think is very interesting in terms of they're providing that context. And I think context usually is key to good leadership. as long as people, as I say, as long as people understand the problem we're trying to solve, then they're going to be bought into what the leader is trying to do. And to me, that is good leadership. And what's interesting there is that is nothing to do with hierarchical management either. Anyone can be a good leader. Obviously, with hierarchical management, you get a slightly different aspect to it. But literally anyone on a team can be a leader, because it could be that they've discovered a new piece of tech and they're bringing it to the team and they're actually leading with that. And they are telling people why they think this is a good idea. And that's crucial. And so for me, that's a big piece of it. And I get that from a lot of people as well. Learning different ways to articulate the context and the reasons. And it could be that some people present in a style that is very data heavy and they can articulate why we should be doing something and how we're going to achieve it. And this is why we need to move in this direction. And it's all data driven. Okay, that's great. Some people respond very well to that. In other scenarios, data isn't the answer to the to articulating the problem or proving the way forwards. Data might come at the end, and you might, again, coming back to something I've mentioned, like hypothesis-driven development, you might have an idea, but it is about how do you get that idea to be understood by others, to get them bought in. And that requires a range of tools within a way of articulating and a way of speaking and a way of changing the manner in which conversations happen with different people. Talking to a team who need to build something is different from talking to stakeholders who need to understand why the team is now going to be working on it. And it's different from talking to directors as to why the priority needs to be given for us to work on this. And those things are what a leader needs to do. And those are different conversations every time. But I've seen people do these things. And so every time I see them in my day-to-day, at conferences, through books or audiobooks, it's about just being aware of there might be scenarios that I can't relate to yet, but thinking on them and going, oh, okay, that's interesting. They had this problem and they kind of articulated it in this way for this audience or whatever it might be, then just kind of making a mental note of that, because in the future, I may well be in a similar situation myself, and being able to rely on that way of dealing with it could be very useful.
There's one part about being a manager that I never really considered, actually. To get other people on board with a new idea in the business, you almost have to, if you want people to actually get on board with it and push it forward, you almost have to sell the idea to them.
Yeah.
You have to become almost, you almost have to like pitch it in like a sales kind of way. Have you experienced that? Is that something that I've just experienced? Have you experienced that too?
To an extent. So the way in which we work is generally our product teams will be dealing with kind of prioritization of work, and they will be dealing with stakeholders, getting stakeholder buy-in for the priority of work, the roadmap of work. And so from a dev perspective, what we might be doing is not necessarily going to stakeholders with ideas, but we're going to the product owners or product managers with the ideas and saying, look, we've come up with a way of doing something new, and we want some space on the roadmap in order to do that. And there is a bit of a sales pitch, but normally our product teams are quite kind of close to the tech anyway. So they do appreciate that, yeah, this is going to be a good idea. So we don't have to sell it too much. In my role, I have done a bit of the more salesy pitch stuff. And in that regard, I will rely on data, coming back to the different kind of ways in which kind of sharing context, I will rely on data for that kind of thing to get the buy-in from. That was from I needed broad business buy-in, because this was going to be a massive project that would impact a few of our teams, and it wouldn't be a quick thing, but it was really, really valuable to do. And so, yeah, being able to articulate and explain and really make people take notice, because sometimes tech isn't interesting. It is a tool to solve business problems, but it itself might not be interesting. And so when we as technical people, when we're as developers and we're trying to explain to someone who isn't living and breathing code why we want to make these changes, they're not interested in what framework we're going to use. They're not interested in how many lines of code we're going to write or remove. Maybe we remove code. That's always good. They're interested in how does it affect the bottom line? How does it affect the customer experience? How does it affect the performance of the site? That's the crucial bit. That's the information that to some stakeholders we need to convey. Whereas when we're talking to the teams, it's a very different message. The teams need to understand, well, this is the framework we're going to use. This is the way we're going to implement it. These are the new systems that we're going to need. And then maybe it's also, this is how fast we need it to be. They need to have an appreciation of how this will improve the customer experience as well. But it is slightly less of a focus. But again, it is that context. When they understand why we're doing it, what the overall objective is, then it makes life much easier.
Yeah, it's so interesting because you're having to have, you know, different conversations about the same thing to get other people interested. And there's one thing that really struck me then, which was how much of leadership is about empathy?
I think it's a lot, actually.
Yeah.
I think if you're not empathetic with people, and that's probably not even leadership. I think that's, there's a lot there about being empathetic in life. And much of leadership within the roles that we're kind of discussing here comes from being someone who is good with people. One of the values of the Betway Group is authenticity. And I try and be authentic in everything that I do. And I don't think I've got a different persona when I'm being head of dev or when I'm Michael out and about, not at work. And understanding what makes people tick is massively important,
right,
in terms of being a good leader and understanding how could this message that might be a difficult message to land, how can this be done in a way that people can appreciate why it's happening? They might not like it, but they understand why it needs to be done. That relies on empathy. That relies on understanding how people work in general, but maybe also those key individuals who we're talking to. And if you don't have empathy, then that message, which could be a good or bad message, it won't land in the way it needs to land if there isn't empathy in the way that it is delivered.
Absolutely. And I've got one final question, even though I really could sit here all day. I really could sit here all day and chat to you. I'm learning so much. It's incredible. If you've got time for one more question, Michael.
Yeah, can do one more. That's fine.
Excellent. So finally, what would you say has been your greatest achievement as a leader or your proudest moment?
What I am really proud of is always the team's success. And I think I've only been in the job since January. And one of the key things that I've tried to do is get the developers, the architects, the team leads that I manage to be more of a single team. We've got multiple actual product teams and streams within the department, but we aren't necessarily a cohesive team. And that's one of the things that I've tried to do. And that's, to me, been really rewarding to see that happen. So we now have weekly meetings that really feel like a team of people coming together. And we might go away and for the rest of the week, maybe don't really interact as a group again, because we're interacting with our own actual teams. But when we're now coming together, the conversations are really quite, I'd say, robust in that we're very honest. And if people want to share opposing views, it's a safe space to do so. And that is allowing us to come up with these kind of front-end principles, back-end principles, general principles for the way that we work. We're coming up with standards, all of this best practice, putting up these guardrails, because people feel that they can say, but I think we should be doing this. And here are the reasons why. And someone else goes, yes, but in my experience, that hasn't worked because of X, Y, Z. And so we've got a really good, honest, open space where people are quite happy to share their ideas. And it is about sharing ideas and making sure that we as a team are working most effectively as people, but also with the tools that we have and the products that we build, the problems we're trying to solve. And all of that is crucial to us being able to meet the needs of the business and to deliver a great customer experience.
Incredible. It really sounds like you're such a natural leader and genuinely, and it feels like, you know, your team are very lucky to have someone like you leading them, because you seem like a very approachable and, like we're mentioning, empathetic, you know, person. And but for now, even though I could absolutely just, I really could sit here all day just drinking coffee and chatting to you. I really could.
I'm enjoying it. It's good.
Yeah. So, yeah, thanks so much for taking the time to go on the show. I'm fully aware that I've taken up far too much of your time for a busy guy like yourself. So yeah, I really do appreciate it. So thank you.
Thank you very much. It's been great to talk about all of this stuff.
Thanks for listening to Venturi's Voice. If you like the show, give us a follow on your favourite streaming platform.